Last Sunday, in our second lesson in my series on Unity's Most Basic Teachings, I quoted something. I quoted John 8:32, where Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free." But I didn't explain just how important that quote is to us in Unity. You may have figured it out by the fact that every time you enter the church, you pass by those words up on the wall. And that actually was in response to something I said to somebody that was attending the church at the time. I said I thought those words should appear at the entrance of every Unity church. And the reason is, of all of the passages of Scripture we could quote, in Unity we're most fond of that particular passage because it is our mission statement in Unity. Our mission in Unity is to find that truth that Jesus was talking about, the truth that he promised will set us free. In Unity, we are truth seekers. You know, if you go to a Catholic church, you call yourself a Catholic. If you go to a Baptist church, a Baptist. A Lutheran church, a Lutheran. But traditionally, historically, people that attend Unity churches have always called themselves students. And back in the beginning, especially, we didn't call ourselves Unity students. No, we called ourselves truth students. Truth students. Why is this so important? Well, as Jesus told Pilate, "This is why I was born. For this I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth, who is a friend of truth, who belongs to the truth, hears and listens to my voice, to what I have to say." That's interesting because we think of Jesus come into the world to be the Messiah, to be the Savior. But he says, he was born, he came into the world to bear witness to the truth. But you probably remember Pilate's response. When Jesus said this to him, Pilate asked a question. He said, "Well, what is truth? What indeed? What kind of truth is Jesus talking about? What kind of truth is the truth we seek in Unity? And how can we distinguish what is true in that way, that Jesus Christ way, from what isn't, from what is false? How can we understand what we should affirm and what we should say no to and deny?" Because it's not as simple as it sounds. I mean, Jesus has to be talking about more than simple honesty, because even the most honest person in the world doesn't always tell the truth. That's a fact. Well, to begin with, even truly honest people often find permissible to tell a little white lie to spare someone else's feelings, or maybe not to get in trouble. They demonstrated that in a commercial. They had Abraham Lincoln's wife asking him, "Does this dress make me look big in back?" And he said, the answer is no, by the way. No matter how she looks, the answer is no. But that's not what I'm talking about here. I don't mean that kind of untruth, because sparing someone else's feelings isn't a bad thing. And keeping yourself out of the doghouse is an even better thing. Now, I'm talking about unintentional untruths. Because I think most people, in most circumstances, oh, they may occasionally exaggerate, they may occasionally tell a white lie to spare someone else's feelings, but most people try to tell the truth most of the time. But the truth we tell is limited by our knowledge of truth. Because I have found most people, especially in regard to religion, believe a lot of kind of crazy things. Believe all sorts of things that, at least according to Jesus Christ, aren't true at all. And believe things, I mean sincerely, totally, absolutely believe things that aren't true in many ways. And these truths that we believe totally, sincerely, they can get us into big trouble, and they can get other people into big trouble. They can literally cause innocent people to be incarcerated, and have. Think of all the stories you've read in newspapers or seen on the news of someone who had been in prison, sometimes for years and years. They were thrown into prison on eyewitness testimony. Somebody said, they did it, I saw it, I'm swearing on the Bible. And with 21st century DNA testing, they discovered that person could not have done it. They were completely innocent. There's no way they could have done it. What's the explanation? Was the eyewitness lying? No, I'll bet if you administered a lie detector test on that eyewitness, they would have passed. I'll bet you they believed wholeheartedly that they were telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth when they testified. It's just that what they believed to be true wasn't true. That's why in law enforcement circles, increasingly, eyewitness testimony is come to be regarded as about the least reliable kind of testimony. Because 12 people can witness the same event and give you 12 different descriptions of what happened. And if they happen to have caught it on camera, you get a 13th version of what happened. So, honesty and truth, they're not the same thing. We can be completely honest and honestly mistaken. So this is obviously not what Jesus is talking about. This is actually what Jesus was talking about when he said, we should judge not by appearances. He said, be honest in your judgment and do not decide at a glance or by appearances, but judge fairly and righteously. What Jesus calls fair judgment, righteous judgment, is not judging by what you see out there. It's judging by a different standard. The truth we seek is of a higher level. Well, like in those court cases, what the DNA test provided was a higher and more accurate level of truth. It revealed something that the eyewitness was mistaken about. And that data is irrefutable because it is based not on any outer observation or anyone's opinion. It's based on a higher truth. Now, the kind of higher truth Jesus is talking about, the kind of higher truth we're seeking in unity, isn't the kind a forensic scientist seeks in a court case. No, the higher truth we are seeking is spiritual truth, universal truth, things that are as true and valid and irrefutable in the realm of spirit as DNA testing is in the realm of forensics, as 2 + 2 = 4 is in the realm of mathematics. Things that are true in spirit. Things that are true about God and about ourselves. That is the true knowledge that makes us free. And how do I tell true beliefs from false? Well, there are a number of ways, and I want to go through a few of them this morning. The first way is obvious. I touched on it last week. If the truth sets us free, then freedom or bondage tells us if what I'm believing is a truth or if what I'm believing isn't true. If it's the truth that I'm believing in some area of my life, then in that part of my life, it's going to seem like green lights all the way. I may approach intersections, but each time I come up to one, the light will turn green. I may approach closed doors, but just as I get near them, they'll open up, just like the doors do at the grocery store. I may have hurdles, but I'll clear each one as I come to it and do it easily. There may be twists and turns, but I will be carried by the current of life around those twists and turns. Things will fall into place. I will feel like nothing is holding me back, even if there are things in my path. I'll just flow through, around, over, or under them. And it will come easy. On the other hand, if in some area of my life, it feels like I'm being held back and blocked at every turn, it feels like my life is, all of my life in this part of area is sort of like, did you ever drive down Manchester at rush hour? Kind of like that. I don't know that this is a fact, but I'm pretty sure they got traffic lights cheaper in bulk along Manchester because they have an awful lot of them. And maybe it's just me, but they always seem to turn red at my approach on Manchester. And it seems like there's lots of people stopped on Manchester. Well, life can be like that. And typically, when we get frustrated, when things keep blocking us, our reaction is to get angry. But those red lights aren't what's holding us back. Not according to Jesus. What's holding us back is a false belief. The cause of our frustration isn't the red light, isn't that other person, isn't that situation. It is a belief in my mind that's not true, but I erroneously have believed it's true. And if I clear up the belief, the traffic will clear up. The doors that seem to slam in my face every time I come to the threshold, they'll open up. And it'll happen, and it can happen amazingly quickly. I remember, you know, one of the things about, I love many things about ministry, but there are many things about it that are a little challenging. One of the things I like least about ministry is, over the last 41 years, I've spent a whole lot more time with my church families than I have with my actual family. And I especially, looking back now that they're kind of pasty middle-aged men, starting to lose a little of their hair, I think, boy, I wish I could have spent more time with my kids when they were young. But so often, the job got in the way. I remember one time, I was going to take my youngest son to some movie he wanted to see. It was probably some science fiction thing or something. I remember I wasn't particularly interested in it, but he really wanted to see this movie. And I promised him I'd take off work early so I could take him this movie. And we were dressed, we were about to walk out the car, and the phone rang. And it was somebody from the church. It was a parishioner who was having a real problem. I couldn't put them off. And I had to talk to him right then. But out of the corner of my eye, I could, as I was praying with this person, see my son. And he had that, here we go again, the look on his face. One that, well, growing up, my dad saw on my face many times as he was building up his business and wasn't home a lot. And finally, I got off the phone, and I said, okay, Dieter, we're going to make it to this movie. I don't know how. Maybe they'll have a lot of previews or something, but we're going to make it. So we got in the car. It's about a 15-minute drive. According to the newspaper, the movie's going to start in 5. All the way there, I kept affirming, I live and move in God's good time. Time is not holding me back. Now, there was a clock on the dashboard of my car, and the clock kept affirming, you're late. So I just kept in my mind saying, I live and move in God's good time. And every time I looked at that clock, I said, that's not holding me back. We hit every green light. We pulled in 10 minutes late. Walked in, and the newspaper had misprinted the time of the movie. It started in 5 minutes. We had enough time to get a just literally heart attack level thing of popcorn. What is it they put in that stuff? That's not real butter. I don't know what it is. That's not butter. I think I used to put that on the transmission of my Studebaker. But it tastes good. We managed to get our snacks. We had no problem finding a place to sit. Theater filled up right after we got there. We sat down in time to see all the previews, to see the movies, and most of all, in time for me not to, as I have had so many times, let my son down. I don't remember the movie at all, but I do remember that feeling of having not let my son down. And I know it wasn't a coincidence. If I had been in any other mindset, I would have been 15 minutes late. The newspaper would have been right. We wouldn't have found a seat. Because I'd done that, too many times. Changing your belief will change your life. Life won't change till you do it. What you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free is to teach us is that's the case. The one thing in our lives we need to change is ourselves. So how do we change? Well, first of all, want to know what's true, what's false, what to deny, what to affirm? If you're blocked, that's a false belief that's in your way. You may think it's something else, but it's a false belief. Change the belief, and that outer condition, you'll start to get a handle on it and eventually overcome it. A second thing is, again, pretty obvious. People say life doesn't come with an instruction book. Well, it does. However, I will say, and this is to your benefit, only about a third of it is required. This much is all you need. This much is interesting as a metaphor. This much is all you really need. Is what I'm believing consistent with what the New Testament teaches about myself, other people, and God? Now, the New Testament. I've talked about this in a previous lesson. The Old Testament God and the New Testament God concept are about as different as night and day. The Old Testament God concept, if you take it literally, is like the grouchy old guy in the neighborhood that says, hey, you kids, get off my grass. The Old Testament God is an angry, all-powerful old man who holds a grudge, who wants you to feel guilty and ashamed, who punishes, who wants you only to love your own people and to hate everybody else. Not a nice person. The New Testament God is so much nicer. The New Testament God is all about love and forgiveness, not wrath and vengeance. The New Testament God is all about love and forgiveness, not following the rules. The New Testament God is like a warm, loving parent, not a grouchy old man. The New Testament God is all-embracing, not exclusive. Is all-inclusive. The Jesus Christ version of God is a God worth worshiping. Is it built on the model of the Old Testament? In a way, but it is very different. It is very different. And if we call ourselves Christians, I don't see how we can claim to do that if the God we worship is the Old Testament God. We should worship the New Testament Jesus Christ God. And that God tells us we should love each other. Even the people we don't like. In fact, according to Jesus Christ, especially the people we don't like, we're supposed to love. Doesn't mean we have to like everything they do, but we have to think of them in terms of love. What's that mean? I'm going to give you homework. I said, in Unity we call ourselves students. Well, I'll give you a homework assignment. Two of them, in fact. The first one is, every night before you go to bed, for at least this week, I want you to read 5 Bible verses. Just 5. It won't take you 5 minutes. Here's what they are. The first is, since the New Testament teaches us God is love, and that's our standard, is this belief of God? Does it reflect truth about God? Then it has to express what love is like. I want you to read 4 chapters from the first chapter of 13th Corinthians. 4 verses, rather, from the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. I want you to read verse 4 through 8 of that one chapter. It's the greatest document explanation of what love is in the New Testament, and it's easy to remember. You've read it before. And if it's true about love, since God is love, what you're reading there is true about God. And since we are made in the image and after the likeness of God, then it's true about us. It's true about the people we have trouble loving, and it's even true about us when we have trouble loving ourselves, because that's, with a lot of us, the hardest person in our lives to love sometimes, ourselves. The other verse is a single one. It's the 8th verse of the 4th chapter of Philippians in the New Testament. God, the New Testament God, is simply good. Is goodness itself. Is light with no darkness in it. And since you are God's child, made in God's image and after God's likeness, deep down, that's what you really are. That's our human nature is good. It may be well hidden. That light of goodness may be hidden under a bushel basket, like Jesus said in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. But it's there. And if I'm not seeing it, it means all I'm looking at is the basket. And I'm ignoring the light beneath. when the only way to heal it is to get rid of the basket, so all we see is the shining of the light beneath. The eighth verse, or rather fourth, the eighth verse of the fourth chapter of Philippians tells you what you should focus on. I want you to read those five verses every night. You can read any of the Sermon on the Mount of Jesus' parables while you're at it, but read those five verses. And finally, the gold standard of how to know what's true is this belief based on something that happened outside of myself? Something someone said or did? Some outer event? In other words, is it what triggered it? Something in the realm of appearances. The ultimate arbiter of truth cannot be found anywhere outside of yourself. Not even in Jesus Christ. The ultimate arbiter of truth can only be found within. Yes, Jesus taught us to pray, "Our Father who art in heaven." But remember where he said heaven is. It's not up in the sky, it's on top of some mountain. You won't get any closer to heaven if you're in the balcony. Although it occurs to me that could be a way to get more volunteers to help with the sound. Nah. Now, Jesus said, the kingdom of God does not come with observation. Either shall you be able to say, lo, it is, here it is, or lo, there. Lo, the kingdom of God is within you. And when he was about to leave the disciples, about to meet the people that were going to arrest him, and he was trying to prepare them for it, he told them something that is still true to us. He told them, I assure you, most solemnly I tell you, I promise you, if you believe me, if you love me, God will give you another comforter, another helper, advocate, in my place. One that will remain with you forever. And who is this comforter? The Spirit of Truth, whom the world cannot receive or take to heart because the world can't see the Spirit of Truth. For it lives with you and is in you. He said, I've told you these things while I was still with you. But the Comforter, the Advocate, the Spirit of Truth, whom the Father will send in my place, in my name, it will teach you things and cause you to recall everything that I have taught you. It will teach you things I cannot teach you. He says of the Spirit of Truth, I'm telling you nothing but the truth. When I say it is good for you, profitable for you, advantageous for you, that I go away. Because if I do not go away, this comforter, this advocate, will not come into close fellowship with you. But if I go away, I will send him to you and you will be in close fellowship with you. Jesus perceived with his disciples that he was coming between them and God. As long as they had him, Why would they look within? We have Jesus as our guide, as our wayshower, as our helper. But Jesus doesn't want us to look to him. He wants us to look within. Yes, pray to Jesus. You can have a personal relationship with Jesus, I promise. But what Jesus wants is for you to form a personal relationship with the Christ in you, with that Spirit of truth in you, because that is your hope of glory. He says, I still have many things to say to you, but you're not ready to bear them or grasp them now. But when the Spirit of truth, the truth-giving Spirit comes, it will guide you into all truth, the whole truth, the full truth. This is your second homework assignment. The second most critical thing we do in unity. In unity, we practice the silence, or as other walks of spirit call it, we meditate. There are three things people do to reach out to God. They pray, they contemplate, and they meditate. Now, prayer is when we talk to God. But according to Jesus Christ, God knows our need even before we ask. So when we talk to God, mostly we're telling God things God already knows. Contemplation is, well, doing something like reading those five verses of scriptures every night and just reflecting on them, contemplating their meaning. But meditation is in a sense the opposite of prayer. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation is being silent and listening. Listening with the understanding that even if you're not conscious of it on some level, every moment you spend just being still and open to God, even if you can only open the door of your soul a crack, God will get in. God will find a way into your soul. If you just spend even 5 minutes a day buttoning the lip, understand God knows what you need, and seeking first God's kingdom, God's righteousness, just getting still and letting God do the talking. And if you do it long enough and often enough, that crack will get bigger. And you'll begin to feel God every time you meditate. And let's do a little of that now. Let's just have a few minutes of meditation today. And to center ourselves for our experience of God in meditation, let's know that God is real. And God really is right here. Right within us now. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent. And so it is.